You ready?
This is the Mike Salk Show
on Seattle Sports Station.
Are you ready?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Are you ready for a good team?
Oh, yeah, let's go. Mike Salk Show, Seattle Sports, 710, seattlesports.com, and the Seattle Sports application on your phone. How you guys doing today? I am in a fantastic mood. I'm feeling great. It's Friday.
Application?
Yeah, isn't that what that is? Isn't that what they're called?
The kids are calling it.
The applications on your phone? Right. I was being formal more. It's a formal kind of a day. The sun is shining. It's a beautiful weekend.
Friday? I thought it was usually casual Friday.
I'm going formal Friday today. What can I tell you? We're going to, I'm going to call everybody by their full and formal name. Today, I will tell you it's the Michael Jeffrey Salk Show here on Seattle Sports Station on 710 a.m. And we'll be formal over the whole course of the day.
Speaking of formal, I walked in this morning. Salk's like, oh, I didn't quite see you out of the corner of my eye. I think you're wearing a white button up. Do you have a court date? Like, that's the first thing you would think, not like anything else.
I can't imagine another scenario in which you'd be wearing a white button-down
shirt.
Says
a lot about me, I guess.
Does it, though? Like, I've known you a while. I don't think I've ever seen you in anything like that. like a nicely starched white button-down shirt or something like that.
Someday I'm going to come surprise you, then.
That would be awesome. I would absolutely look forward to you coming in one day, like, all dressed to the nines.
I'm going to do a formal week every day.
Well, all right, so let's see. We have, I can't even tell you how much I want to get to today. A lot for a Friday, especially. And yes, I am in a good mood. I'm going on a little mini vacation, going down to San Diego later this afternoon. One of my favorite cities in the country. San Diego just is a place that makes me happy, and I haven't been there in a while. So we're going to go spend the 4th down there, which means, unfortunately, that I don't get to go to tonight's ball game. Mariners are playing great baseball, and fireworks night.
Patriotic
fireworks night. Generally a Salk family tradition. One of the best fireworks opportunities around. You go, you watch the game, it gets done, it gets dark, they do the fireworks, you hear all the patriotic songs, everybody cheers. It's the best way to take in the fireworks around Seattle. So make sure if you don't have a ticket for tonight, you're going, and I'm sorry I won't see you there this year, but I've done it many times, and it is truly one of my favorite takes. The kids are already gone. They're down in the Bay Area with my in-laws. So Heather and I were home alone last night, went out, and we're like living our best life. You guys must have the best life.
Oh, what does living your best life entail for the
last
for
night?
Heather
it was like she got done with work at 7. I went down to Tacoma yesterday afternoon. So that was a good 3 hours back and forth in the car. I talked to Jared Kelnick. We'll play that for you at 7:30 this morning. Good conversation with JK. Got to take in the whole minor league atmosphere, which is bizarre, as always.
Bizarre.
But, well, Cheney's a great stadium, by
yeah,
the way.
It's very nice.
It is. But while the players are doing their, you know, warm-ups and taking infield and batting practice, there was a group of like 150, maybe 250 employees of the Department of Corrections going through some sort of an award ceremony in the right field stands over the PA system. Dude, I don't know.
Okay.
Like, we'd like to congratulate Susie Hoffman. She, you know, avoided a knife attack.
What?
Like, what?
No, they didn't see
Dude,
that.
I swear to God, the whole thing was just fantastic.
Oh, okay.
Now it's time for the Leadership and Creativity Awards. This is for the person. You're just like, they're going on and on. So, minor league baseball's funny.
Speaking of fireworks, San Diego does have a great fireworks show.
Oh, yeah?
And the only reason I know that is because they went famous for having the world's greatest fireworks mishap, where all of their fireworks went off in 17 seconds.
I kind of remember that.
It's the craziest, most chaotic, insane video you've ever seen of fireworks. It looks like just a giant bomb. Like, it's a huge fire mushroom cloud. And yeah, anyway, there's a really good fireworks show.
I will be there. I'll be up in, I think, Del Mar for the 4th. So looking forward to that. Yeah, I got a buddy who lives over there. So anyway, our best life last night was she got done with work at 7. I got home from Tacoma and we were like, hey, let's go to Chuck's Hop Stop and get a little...
Chuck's Hop Shop?
Hop Shop, what did I say? Stop Hop Shop, yes.
Yeah.
And
on Greenwood?
Yes, sit
Love
outside
it.
And... take in the night and get a little food truck food. It was awesome. Great night.
Good. I love to hear it.
And then watch the Mariners just kind of doing their thing. They just win. No big deal. Just like go out, hit the ball, and win. Right? I mean, like, seriously, that's what they're doing. They just go out and they hit the ball, and when you do that, you win. It's been fantastic.
Scoring runs.
Yeah. I mean, the game's a whole lot easier when you do that, right? When you score more than a run, it's a lot easier and more fun to watch baseball games and win baseball games. And, you know, it's kind of relaxing. You get up, you score eight runs, and nobody has to panic even when the other team starts to come back. 8-6 is fine.
Winning is fun, yes. And I think we're 8-2 in our last 10 games. That's when guys relax and get going and get on each other and have a good time. And, you know, I think bringing in a couple of veteran players has helped as well. I know Justin Upton maybe hasn't swung the bat like he'd like to yet, but the contributions he's made in our clubhouse, we get Carlos Santana in and around talking to our guys, and the value of veteran leadership and those guys coming in, and they just command, they have a certain presence about them. It has helped. It's helped our team, and I think those guys can help us on the field yet, too. I just want to give those guys a shout-out because they've done a nice job behind the scenes.
You say veteran leadership?
You did.
Yes.
Did I just give you kind of a church lady look for some reason when he said it? Like, isn't that special?
What did I just hear?
Yeah.
Was that one of my four things that I've been begging for?
Was it? I think it might have been.
It was?
I think it might have been, along with a veteran who can still hit. And I don't know if Carlos Santana is going to be that guy or not yet, but... You can kind of feel them playing better baseball, and it's going to be a tough road to hoe here as you kind of walk through the suspension started last night with J.P. Crawford, and the Winker one's going to hurt, and we'll see what happens with Julio. I don't know how they're going to live without Julio for like 10 minutes. He is just unbelievably special, and you saw it again last night with another crazy home run, et cetera. So yeah, I don't know how they're going to live without those guys for a long time, but... You know, they do seem to have started to capture something, and maybe it was, you know, the first little brouhaha in Houston, followed by the bigger one in Anaheim, followed by playing some teams that weren't the best teams in the league for a little while. Well, that's okay. You take care of business, you beat those teams, you grow confidence, and then when you've got to take on the Yankees and some of the other better teams in the next few weeks, you're a little bit more prepared for it. So I really like what the Mariners are doing right now. It's fun to watch. Good baseball, and the whole Cal Raleigh situation is fun. So a lot there.
All right. JP got reduced. We don't know about the other guys
yet. We don't know about the other guys. JP went from 5 games to 4.
Okay.
My guess is what? Winker goes 7-5 or something like that.
I hope so.
And Julio goes to maybe a game. I think that's sort of their hope, is that they get a game or two off of all of these. So we'll see what happens. As I said, we got Jarek Kelnick for you at 7:30. I'm trying to describe him. So it's a cool scene down there, right? It's much more casual, easier to grab guys, etc. I had to wait for him because I think he went to throw a bullpen, if I'm not mistaken. Like, he was like sort of pitching on the side.
What?
Yeah, he was just having fun, right? I mean,
okay.
Like,
keeping loose.
Yeah, honestly, like, isn't that what we want him to do? Stay loose? He's joking with his teammates, and he really does look comfortable and like he's having a good time out there. It does not escape my attention that he and Justice Sheffield are wearing their Winker Factory or Electric Factory Mariners t-shirts,
nice.
While cool. A lot of other guys are wearing Tacoma Rainiers t-shirts.
Cool.
Like, if you got it, wear it. Mm-hmm. Like, I've been up there this year, I'm wearing this one, and that's where I want to get back to. And that was noticeable. He also, and Justice does not do that, cuts the sleeves off. And it works better for him.
Justin's favorite.
Yeah.
But it works for him in a way
sleeveless
it doesn't work for Justin. Yeah, he is sleeveless in Tacoma.
not quite the same punch as sleeveless in Seattle, but I'll allow it.
Dude, he's pretty ripped, dude. Like, he can pull off the sleeveless look better than, say, you. But it was an interesting time talking to him. He was not as forthcoming, I think, and as introspective as he was when we talked to him in spring training. He's a little bit more on guard, which I understand, and that's not a criticism. I understand why he'd be feeling that way. Wait, you're coming down from Seattle to talk to me? Why? Right? It's not like I'm killing the ball right now. You're coming down to do a story on kind of where I'm at. So I don't blame him if he's a little suspicious and a little, you know, on guard. But I think when you hear it at 7:30, he did reveal quite a bit about what's going on in his head and kind of where it goes from here. So a good conversation with Jarek Kelnick. We'll do that coming up at 7:30. And then, yes, obviously, over the course of the morning, we're going to be talking about this mammoth, titanic, earth-shaking news about USC and UCLA leaving the Pac-12. It is a mammoth change. And I'll tell you exactly what it's going to do to the University of Washington and Washington State, along with everything else you need to know next. Mike Salk Show, Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com.
need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
The Bats got going, and the Mariners kept rolling. They scored early and often last night en route to an 8-6 win. Usually hard to find a highlight that tops another mammoth Julio bomb, but Cal Raleigh certainly found a way last night.
The set and the 1-2 pitch, the Raleigh swing, and a fly ball deep center field. Holt going back, Morty tracked to the wall off his glove. Two runs are going to score, Santana scores, he's waving in Toro, Toro will score, Cal at third, the throw to third hits him in the back, he's headed home, he's going to score! Holy smokes, everybody scores! Cal Raleigh with a mad dash around the bases!
That's a very generous way of describing it. Triple slash Little League home run for Cal Raleigh, who I think was pretty well winded after that when he hit a double later and there was, didn't seem to be any thought of heading to third base after that
one. Did you hear that he also did that after his walk-up song being Dancing Queen?
Yeah, what was the deal with that?
I don't know.
He went
I love
ABBA,
it.
Huh?
It's yeah.
Going to stick with that, probably.
Sure.
I mentioned that it found a way to beat Julio's home run, but you know what? I'll play it for you anyway.
The 1-0. Swing, and it's clubbed out to center. This is on its way back to the batter's eye. Gone, Julio! Home run! Straight away center field, mashed. He has given the Mariners a 2-1 lead.
That's a tater. He hit all that one. Credit to Julio. It's been pretty fun to watch, huh? We had the first triple, I think, of Cal Raleigh's life. He did go 2-for-4 with two runs driven in, completed a ridiculous month for him. He hit 6 home runs in June, had 8 more extra base hits, and an OPS of 925. Not bad production from a young catcher. I said Julio hit his 13th, Dylan Moore hit his 4th, while filling in for J.P. Crawford, who did elect to start his suspension yesterday after having it reduced down to 4 games. Ty France, one step closer to the All-Star game. He made the runoff, so they now do it so the top 2 vote-getters at each position go into a runoff against each other. Good luck in a name recognition battle against Vlad Guerrero Jr. at first base. But hey, good for him. He's made it to this round. Hopefully he'll be added to the team. No timeline yet, though, from his return for injury.
I don't really have the skill set to determine how concerned to be. But you know, I do know that he experienced a very real injury. And Ty's a very tough player. He's a tough guy. I know he's in there working his tail off. And I would suspect that we will see Ty back in the lineup before most guys would get back. That just is, again, it's his personality, and you don't change that. But, you know, he did experience a pretty significant injury.
Didn't sound great. Back at it against Oakland tonight, Marco Gonzalez against James Caprillion.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
A natural disaster of sorts for the remaining 10 schools in the Pac-12 as USC and UCLA have agreed to abandon ship and head to the Big Ten, which now will have 14 schools if you're keeping track at home. L.A., not only the biggest market in the conference, obviously, but USC by far the biggest, if not the only national draw. So without those two schools, pretty hard to envision a future forward for this conference that would be viable. So what does that mean for UW or for Washington State? Nothing good. UW, I guess, could try to band together with Oregon and beg to be let into the Pac-10 or to the Big Ten also. The whole conference could, I guess, merge with one of the remaining dregs of the Big 12 to form some sort of big pack or something like that. But I don't know if there's enough there to be viable in any kind of a major way. That would be a second-tier conference anyway. And as for Wazoo, I guess that would be their best shot because I don't see any way one of the new super conferences is going to want them in with the media market. So, look, the truth is the last decade of media darkness and refusal to cater to fans has deeply hurt this conference. And yes, Larry Scott is very much to blame for its demise. UW can try to offer its media market, right? Seattle's number 12 in the country. It can offer some of its history. I don't know if that is going to be enough. So if I'm a UW or a Washington State fan, I think the thing that hurts today, probably more than anything, is how blindsided your school was. It's not just that you got left behind. It's that you didn't even know it was coming. You weren't even part of the conversation. And I think that's got to hurt a lot.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Sounds like Deshaun Watson's hearing has come to an end after 3 days of testimony. Former Judge Sue Robinson now will consider the case and make a recommendation. Now, it could take some time. Of course, either side can appeal her ruling, and That appeal just puts Roger Goodell in sole position of deciding justice, which, of course, makes the whole hearing a complete sham. Be a good word to describe Kevin Durant's time in Brooklyn. Also, the star forward requested a trade yesterday after a largely forgettable run with the Nets. Kyrie's taken off. Durant's looking to bail. I guess it would leave Ben Simmons and a whole lot of nothing left in Brooklyn. It's everything you need to know. We do that 15 minutes past every hour here on the Mike Salk Show. I'm sorry, the Michael Salk Show.
Yes, Michael Jeffrey Salk Show.
Michael Jeffrey Salk Show here on Seattle Sports on 710 a.m.
Yeah. Did you get to watch any of the Tacoma game that you went to when you were talking to Jeff?
I didn't, no.
You saw BP and bounce?
Yeah, unfortunately. I've stayed down there for games. A lot of fun. It's a great, great field, yes. Great stadium.
I love going go to the R yard.
Yeah, it's a good vibe down there, right?
It's awesome.
Yeah.
Big fan. It's a cool stadium. It's a fun product. They do fun stuff on the field in between innings. Like, it's very fun.
I don't know if I would call the whole DOC, Department of Corrections, award show fun necessarily, but it was fun for them, which was nice. Yeah, you're right about the minor league baseball thing. I went down there, and I'm kind of waiting in line at the ticket wheel call area because I had to grab my press pass there. And, woman in front of me, and she's talking for a while, and she's like, hey, can I exchange to my tickets that are for tonight's game for tomorrow night's game? Like, sure, no problem, right? I mean, just like the casual way in which you can sort of deal with the world in minor league baseball is pretty awesome. I was talking to their bullpen catcher, and I'm sorry I didn't get his name, but I heard the story yesterday. He's a Bellarmine Prep. He was a Bellarmine Prep high school grad last year.
Whoa.
Right? And I guess his dad worked somewhere with the team as a physician or something like that. And so he was sort of around the press box a lot, right? And he played catcher at Bellarmine one night. They're like, hey, we need a bullpen catcher. Anybody around? And he's like, I can do it.
I'm a catcher.
And now, like, he's their bullpen catcher. And so, like, you know, Matt Brash is blowing 99, and he's in the bullpen catching him.
How cool would that be?
How cool is that? Right?
Wow.
Talk about
awesome.
A dream job at 19 or whatever he is. So, yeah, you're right. Minor league baseball does have kind of a nostalgic kitsch to it, right? Mm-hmm. In addition to watching the guys desperately trying to get back to the big leagues or get there for the first time and all of it. So, yeah, you'll hear the Jerry Kelnick interview coming up a little over an hour from now at 7:30. And, you know, hey, when you're talking about sort of that vibe, 4th of July, man, fireworks, the whole thing. There's just sort of that Americana nostalgia thing, right? That kind of all gets kind of wrapped up. Minor league baseball, 4th of July, and fireworks. It's kind of a good fit.
Oh, yeah. I've spent many a 4th of July in Tacoma for the Tacoma Freedom Fest.
Really?
Down in Ruston Way.
Is it good?
It's very good. Very, very good 4th of July celebration.
You like a good parade? You like a good, like, 4th of July parade?
Yeah, I mean, we didn't do any of the parade stuff. So I can't speak on behalf of that. But the whole day itself on the Ruston Way waterfront was a fantastic way to spend the 4th.
Sounds pretty good. All right.
I do love parades. I want to go on the record.
You want to go rank parades? Were you around for that more when we ranked parades?
I don't know. I might have blocked it out if I was.
No, you weren't, because Bulls on Parade definitely.
Joined
the Mass Parade. Yeah, we did a lot
of the Black Parade.
Parade of Fools. All right.
That was right before I left.
Coming up next, the Mariners may have found the personality they need. You can hear who that may be coming from directly from Jerry DePoto. He joins me next. Mike Salk Show, Seattle Sports on 710 and seattlesports.com.
The Jerry DePoto Show, presented by Seattle Pump and Equipment on Seattle Sports Station.
Well, Jerry, it was quite a week.
You can say that again.
I promise that I will ask questions about something other than what happened in Anaheim on Sunday, but I have a lot of questions about what happened because I'm fascinated by the whole, I mean, I love unwritten rules and baseball and all of it. Kind of coming together. So what is it? What is that moment like for someone in your position to watch? Are you just terrified someone's going to get hurt? Or like what was that like for you?
Yeah. I mean, you captured it with terrified someone's going to get hurt. It's it's just senseless. The whole thing is ridiculous and wildly outdated, regardless of the unwritten rules. It is what it is. In that we have suspensions to deal with, and and our reactions cost us. But you're in a situation where people are actually throwing things at you, and it's a very high charged emotional scene, and I'm not sure what the guys are supposed to do, frankly, in just walking away from people throwing at you intentionally. And it was very clear it was intentional. So. I think, again, I say it's outdated and that this was a more common thing in the 60s, 70s, 80s, even in the 90s. But over the last 20, 25 years, it's found its way out of the game. And I think that's where it should stay.
You know, you ask a good question. What are you supposed to do? It's something I asked a few times this week. What are you supposed to do? What is the appropriate reaction when another team has, you know, declared their intention by changing their starting pitcher for the day to a sacrificial lamb and then thrown at not just one, but two of the better players on your team? I don't know what else your team is supposed to do at that point.
No, I mean, it really was, I'll call it crisis management. And it's not really something you can train for. And, you know, now that the team, especially the guys that were at the center of it, have been through this, maybe the next time there's a different reaction. But again, you know, once you bake in the competitive emotion, it's hard to determine what will happen in that moment, which is, you know, that type of chaos that we watched on Sunday is the result of the irresponsible, I guess, plan coming in, is that you can't predict what's going to happen. And as a result, you know, two players, one on either side, was injured. You know, we lost three of our better players. We're going to have to play most of the next 2 weeks a man short, which is a challenge. And that's, you know, for teams that are trying to claw their way back into a race, it's not good. And it's just not good look for the game. Yeah. It's, again, outdated and something we need to move past pretty quickly in baseball.
So how are you supposed to pitch to an all-time great player, as we talked about him last week, one of the greatest players who's ever played the game, who crushes specifically low fastballs? What are you supposed to do when you face him?
I guess I don't understand the notion that we were throwing a pitch at Mike Trout, or that Eric Swanson was throwing a pitch at Mike Trout, to me is just, I want to say absurd, because I know Eric Swanson, I know our general talk and chatter. He's trying to hit a spot up and in. And it was very clear in that inning, you know, that Eric, he's a high fastball pitcher who was missing high. And, you know, and unfortunately one of those did sail up and in a little too high. And, you know, that's one of the perils of getting in the batter's box. And unfortunately that moment happened, but I don't think there was any intent. And frankly, I would be surprised if anyone, any rational thinker, thought that there was a great deal of intent. But what we saw on Sunday was the result of irrational thinking. And, you know, and it escalated. And hopefully that's the last we see of it, because I know the next irrational thing would be letting it perpetuate and starting it again. It needs to end on Sunday, and everybody can go back to having their careers and their seasons, et cetera.
So the only question I'll follow up there with, and only because I've heard this for some guys who played the game, is, hey, regardless of intent, if you throw near Mike Trout, you're not doing a good enough job of making sure you don't throw near one of the great guys in the game. You know, what do you make of that sort of an argument?
I don't really buy it, to be honest with you. I pissed enough in the league to know that for the most part, if you just take the great hitters in any era and put them to the side, most of them, you want to pitch them up and in or down and away. That's where the adage comes from. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's, again, you don't want to see what we saw on Saturday night, which is pitch sailing up and in near someone's head. It is a dangerous thing, as we know very well on a couple of occasions this year. But in that case, I don't think there was any intent. It didn't hit him. And, you know, frankly, there aren't a lot of pitchers in the league that are precise in throwing those pitches up and in or down and away, which is why players like Mike are able to feast.
Talking to Jerry DePoto, as we do every week, you mentioned that you'll play the better part of the next few weeks without a player at a time. Do you have more info on what that will look like and what the suspensions will look like?
Well, we're still waiting for confirmation on what the suspensions will look like, but the actual suspensions are likely to start for us as early as tonight. So, you know, for the next 2 weeks or so, our hope is that we get a game or two knocked off each one of the suspensions, and I believe that's a possibility. The league is going to allow us to stagger the suspensions so that we're not forced to play three men short even for a day, and you know, we'll be able to run them back to back to back. And, you know, and again, it's not ideal, but you can manage your way through with a 25-man roster. It's a much different thing when you're trying to manage through with a 23-man roster.
Has anybody
and just 12 position players.
Has anybody figured out what Julio did to get suspended yet?
No. You know, and Julio, like so many, you know, we're running around, they're in a pile, and there are certain things that happen. And I've already heard feedback from some that were in the middle of the mix that there were quite a few people who, you know, both gave and received in that pile that weren't cited. And that's only due to the fact that the umpires, by and large, aren't in the middle of the mix. They're not in the pile. Mm-hmm. And they can't see everything. And we, you know, by virtue of the fact that we're watching on video, can't see everything. But, you know, that being said, none of us can come up with anything on Julio. And you know, hopefully we can get that just erased and Julio can move on. But, you know, once you've been charged, that's hard to do.
Just talking about Julio, I mean, what he's done over the last couple of games, I mean, obviously the last couple of weeks, but just seeing the number of ways he can affect a game between the Athletic play on Saturday night, two nights ago, it wasn't Saturday, in my dreams it was Saturday, a couple of games ago to avoid the tag at first base, and then the home run he hit yesterday, he really, Jerry, he's so special. It's really, we're running out of words to describe him.
And it's happening so early in his career. It's, you know, he has incredible talent. He fills up every toolbox with a plus to elite level tool. And I think his greatest tool is just how much he loves the game. It turns into a competitive advantage for him. And he never has that, because his career is still so young. But one of the most refreshing things about Julio is, like any other player on earth, he's going to go out and he's going to take his 0 for 3 or 0 for 4, and he might take a 1 for 8. But he has a way about him where he comes back to work on the third day, and he's got a smile on his face, and he's working hard, and he finds a way to chip in two hits, and he takes a walk. And somewhere while he was going 0 for, he makes a super athletic catch, and you'd never know he was 0 for his last 8 because of the smile on his face and how much he just enjoys the moment. It's true in Julio's case, it's true if you're up or down in the game. You know, he has a way of making you feel like everything is achievable. We can come back in this. Don't worry, guys. We can do it. And I don't think that's naivety. I think it's just who he is. It's a positive emotional impact on a team every day.
You know, I've had a chance to watch him in person a couple of times in the last few weeks. I've been over at the ballpark, and one thing that jumped out to me, and I'm certainly no expert in this, but it just sure seems like he takes excellent routes to fly balls, that he truly sprints to the spot the ball's going to be, and then he's sitting there waiting for it. Obviously, the speed plays a factor, but how impressed have you been with his ability to play center field?
It's pretty amazing, actually. And from a fundamental perspective, just playing the outfield, you know, he's always behind the baseball. He fields it with the ball in front of him. He comes through it and makes accurate online throws. He hits his cutoff, man. He throws to the right base. It's, you know, those things that you usually learn over time. He just has those skills. And I want to say that those are things that have been like that since he was brought into the Mariners organization. But no, they've evolved very quickly over the last year and a half. And I really think this all began for Julio with the escalation of all his peripheral non-batter's box skills. You know, it really began for him about the time that he went and played for Team Dominican in the Olympics. And he realized how close he was and how great he could be. And his work, I guess his work patterns and focus just changed in that moment. And he has been, for lack of a better way to put it, he has been a work animal since then. He doesn't stop. And he wants to achieve greatness, both for the team and individually. And I think it shows up in what he does every day.
We were talking a little bit this morning about Jesse Winker, who obviously has looked like a different player here over the last couple of weeks. What accounts for Jesse's turn in the last few weeks?
You know, I think we talked about it a little bit last week, if memory serves. You're seeing an easier swing, and I don't know an easier way to express it. You know, in the early months of the season, and you've got a couple of things that are piled up. You know, a player coming to a new team, experiencing new teammates, you know, the trying to manage through difficult weather, a difficult schedule. We could create a full column of potential drawbacks or negatives. And, you know, what we saw was, you know, Jesse was really working to move the bat. And right now it looks just smooth and fluid. And he's taking easy swings and the ball's just jumping. Mm. And some of that could have to do with the fact that it's the weather has warmed up. He has gotten more comfortable in those situations. You know, here in the last 3 or 4 days, he's become a bit of a cult hero at the ballpark. You know, there's a lightness to what Jesse's doing right now. And all the while he took his walks and made great swing decisions. So as a result, you blink and he went from a 580 OPS to a 700 OPS in just a couple of weeks. And I think that next jump is on the way because the at-bats have just been terrific.
Well, that'd be great, obviously. And just you mentioned the cult hero stuff. Did you know this was his personality? I mean, did you know that he was, whether it's quirky or, you know, you guys have had a couple of moments both with Houston and then with the Angels where he has been sort of right in the center of all of it. Did you know that was part of the package with Jesse?
We knew he was a lively personality, but the, you know, Jesse's, and we have a pretty fiery team, the best way to put it. You know, we have a scrappy, fiery group, and I think Jesse's personality does fit us pretty well. And he has the ability or the lack of fear to go out and be the front man in those moments. And sometimes you need that. He plays a role in the story of our team that I'm not sure anyone else quite has all of those traits to play. And it's part of his personality. And as we talked about last week, it's not something you can change. He just naturally brings that to the table. And I find it to be a positive.
Hey, what are you hoping to get out of Carlos Santana? You acquired him for a second time. So far, he's played more games than in the first time because you shipped him back out 10 days later. What's the goal behind Carlos Santana?
You know, we just don't know how long Ty's going to be out. And I expressed all of this to Carlos when I spoke to him on the phone on Monday morning. You know, and the first thing I said to him was, I promise this time you'll get a couple of the bats. He's Carlos had a great career. He is truly in the world of the three true outcomes, especially the ability to dominate the strike zone. Carlos is one of the best players of his generation in managing the strike zone. He is on base. And as we go through this and not knowing when Ty will be back or if Ty will be back and really having had a difficult time, you know, getting productivity out of the DH position while we go through this, you know, what has become just a barrage of injuries to some of our more impactful hitters, Carlos gives us an experienced hitter who's been on a bit of a bender for the last month. You know, the overall numbers look pretty average-ish, but at the end of the day, you know, for the last month or so, Carlos has been, I think, one of the top five players in Major League Baseball and on base, along with Jesse Winker. And, you know, we've seen he's raised his monthly OPS up to about 1,000, you know, or something thereabouts, coming into joining the Mariners. So all the things that Carlos has always done, he is showing signs that he's doing again. He's a very good defensive first baseman. And I think that showed up yesterday for us or the night before and kind of saved us a game. And the veteran know-how, you know, it's something we haven't had a ton of in as we've transitioned from our 2021 group to our 2022 group. And, you know, now adding guys like Carlos, having Justin Upton on the club, bringing in some veteran experience, while we need to get over this bridge, I think is the right thing to do. And you know, get Carlos in the mix while he's going hot and see if he can help us out.
Just to follow up on Ty France, because it didn't sound great the way you were talking about him there. How concerned are you about his ability to make his way back?
I don't really have the skill set to determine how concerned to be. But, you know, I do know that he experienced a very real injury, and Ty's a very tough player. He's a tough guy. I know he's in there working his tail off. And I would suspect that we will see Ty back in the lineup before most guys would get back. That just is, again, it's his personality, and you don't change that. But, you know, he did experience a pretty significant injury. And from the seat that I sit, you know, we are something closing in on about halfway through our season. We're about 5.5 games back of a playoff spot. And this is a pretty critical stretch of schedule that we're in between now and the All-Star break. And with no Mitch Haniger, with no Kyle Lewis, with no Ty France, now with no Taylor Trammell, with no Tom Murphy, we felt like we needed to do something. And if Ty comes back and joins sooner than later, then we get the advantage of doubling down and having the combination of Ty and Carlos Santana between first base and DH. But we really don't have any timeline on any of those players, truth be told. So, you know, adding to our mix was required for us to get through.
You mentioned, you know, all of those guys and all the injuries, especially with Trammell going down. Was there any thought to bringing Kelnick up at that point?
No, you know, we are committed to solving the career development of Jared Kelnick. And I think you've heard that in my voice. Jared is an extremely talented player, and, you know, and through no fault of his own, with a missed season and what, you know, frankly, pointing the glass at me or ourselves was probably a quick trigger on bringing him to the big leagues in the first place before he solved some of, you know, the developmental challenges that we want to see him solve this time before we put him in the big leagues. And, you know, what's happening on the surface, his performance right now in AAA has been excellent. He's working hard. He knows what he needs to focus on, and we're in no rush to bring him back until we see that happen.
So what I'm heading down there today. I'm going to go watch him and talk to him before the game today, because I find him to be such a fascinating character and a thoughtful kid and all of that. What is he working on right now? What does he need to show you?
We're going to leave that between Jared and the Mariners. There's no need for us to make that a focal point of what happens with him every day.
Okay. So I'll go down and I'll see if I can drag it out of him. Something tells me I won't. Something tells me that if it's between him and the Mariners, that's the way it's supposed to be. I enjoyed watching Sam Haggerty yesterday, not just because of the Godfather walk-up music, which is classic and great, but because he just seems like a different kind of player. I'm not sure exactly how to ask this, but is there value to be found in guys who maybe don't have the highest exit velocity in baseball, but find other ways to get on base, to get hits, and then affect the game through other means?
Well, everybody has a certain way that they can impact the game. And, you know, Sam actually has impact ability. Sam's perhaps our best base runner. You know, maybe he and Dylan Moore. They're outstanding when they get on the bases. The decisions they make, their base stealing instincts and ability, and, you know, the ability to advance multiple bases at a time. Sam brings that skill to the table, and when he gets on base, we can make things happen. And, you know, contact ability is a skill, and on base is a skill. And, you know, we're not six deep, eight deep in guys who can hit the ball over the fence with any regularity, but you can build depth like we have with a player like Sam, who can get on base and he can make things happen. And he's versatile enough to play a number of different positions. And, you know, it makes him kind of an ideal utility player at the big league level. And for us to score runs in bulk, we have to be on base. And yesterday we saw moments where we started to get the big hit when runners were on base. And that's something that's been, you know, a problem for us throughout the course of the year. But we're going to just double down on guys that can get on base, create contact, and move around the bases, because it's really hard to go out and find that power element. When you find so much power on the IL right now, you can't go replace all of that. Carlos can do some of it, but by and large, the way you're going to get through the valley of injured players is just by getting on base more and creating action and playing small ball. And those are areas where Sam Haggerty excels.
Jerry, thank you. As we said, it's been a pretty crazy, interesting week, and just certainly entertaining and providing us plenty of stuff to talk about. So enjoy the 4th, and I'll talk to you next week.
Oh, you got it, Mike.
All right, Jerry DePoto, who joins me every Thursday at 8:30. You can usually hear it Friday morning as well at 6:30. Every time when we did it live yesterday, and I just saw a text here from Doug in Tacoma saying, did he say if Ty comes back? Well, I think what he was saying is if he comes back sooner rather than later. I don't think he said if he comes back at all, meaning, hey, we're prepared for him to be out for a little while, and we'll bring Santana in to play first base, and if Ty comes back sooner than later, great. He can move over to DH. So I wouldn't freak out about it. On the other hand, I don't think Ty France is coming back when his DL or IL stint is up. I think it's going to be after the All-Star break. I think you're looking at a couple of weeks without Ty France.
Okay. I mean,
I don't think it's a year, right? Like when he said like, if, I don't think if means like, hey, he might not come back this year, but I'd be surprised if he's going to be able to make it back just, you know, within a week or so. I think it's going to take him a couple of weeks to heal. As you heard Jerry say, it's a significant injury. It's not that Ty's not tough, but you need him to be right. And if you remember when he hurt his hand last year and came back too early, he wasn't the same player until his hand got right. So if you want him to be the guy, you need him to actually heal. So my guess is we end up seeing Ty France after the All-Star break. All right, coming up next here, it was an absolutely earth-shattering kind of a day for college football. The idea of USC and UCLA moving on from the Pac-12 completely changes the landscape. How does it affect the local teams? It's not a great story, but I'll try to tell it next. Mike Salk Show, Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com.